Transportation Committee will come to order. It looks like we've got about an hour and 20 minutes or so to go through about nine bills. So we're going to keep the testimony as short as reasonably possible. First on the agenda is Senator Sieben, Senate File 1903.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 1903 is a pretty simple bill. It basically says that the Commissioner of Transportation may use design build for the connection or for the possible construction of the high-speed rail passenger rail line between Chicago and the Twin Cities. And you'll notice that this language in the bill says that it will connect to the depot in downtown St. Paul. And the reason that we have that language in there is because that's the agreed to route. At the very minimum, that's where we hope that this high-speed rail line will go to.
Senator Sieben, did you have an amendment for this bill?
Mr. Chair, I do have the A1 amendment.
Yeah, if we could get the A1 amendment passed out, we'll...
Chris, I'm holding today.
And I haven't had a chance to talk to many members about this because I really just thought of this last night when we had a bill up in committee that said that directed the Commissioner of Transportation to work with the to apply for rail safety grant money under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. And so this amendment simply says that the Commissioner of Transportation shall work in cooperation with the state of Wisconsin to prepare and submit a timely application under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act for grant funding related to the high-speed passenger rail line.
Discussion on the A1 amendment. Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, actually, I guess my discussion is on the... Well, yeah, I guess it would be the A1 amendment. Senator Sieben, I love this idea. I think it's very creative and that... it's appropriate to put this forward, but I'm wondering if you would consider adding, after the Union Depot Concourse Multimodal Transit Hub, whatever, then add, and potentially connecting to downtown Minneapolis, so that any time we're referring to this particular line, we're always keeping open the possibility it may go to Minneapolis.
Senator Bonoff, are you referencing the bill itself for the design build or both the bill and the amendment?
Mr. Chair, I would have just said itself, but I see it's in both places. So,
right. I think that I'm fine including it in the bill.
Okay.
For sure, or we can and we can just add...
And Mr. Chair and Senator Sieben, you could just say, and the potential connection to Minneapolis.
And the potential future connection to Minneapolis.
I would, Mr. Chair, prefer just and the potential connection so that we don't want somebody to get off the hook. If they can do it, they can do it. But.
Senator Bonoff, the language that Senator Dibble and I agreed to with Senator Murphy in our other bill use both the words potential and future.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, okay.
Mr. Chair.
All right, I'm just second, Senator Dibble. Senator Sieben, you want to state that language one more time?
Sure. So on line 1.12, delete the period after street and insert and the potential future connection to Minneapolis.
Okay, so after the period on line 12, it would read, and the future potential future connection to Minneapolis, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And, Mr. Chair, and then the same thing on the A1 on line 1.2.
On
1.10.
1.10.
Yes, thank you.
Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair, I think that's okay. I just want to make it real clear, though, that what we've been working for here is, at the very least, to make sure that we're getting to the Union Depot in St. Paul. Mm-hmm. And I think as long as we include the potential future connection, it makes it clear that that is an option but not a guarantee. So,
yes,
I'm okay with that.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, and thank you, Senator Sieben, for agreeing to that amendment. Thank you for Senator Bonna for just got here, so I didn't know this was up. And I'm comfortable with that, although, to be clear, we have talked about, you know, this word future is often a sticking point because there is the potential that we'll find out sooner rather than later that this might be easier to do than we thought, so mm-hmm. and may add to the success of an application or the success of a line. So
could run the other way, too, Senator Dibble. It could be more difficult than what
exactly.
anybody thought.
Exactly, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At least we're going to find out.
Yeah.
So on the...
Mr. Chair, I'd move those or each of those amendments.
Okay.
To the amendment first, probably.
Well, we have the A1 amendment in front of us, so we need to deal with the A1 amendment first. So the...
Could I incorporate that new language into my A1 amendment, please?
Right. The new language on the A1 amendment will be incorporated in the motion so that the future potential connection to Minneapolis is part of this motion. On the A1 amendment, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Now, Senator Sieben, we'll do the same thing for the bill. We'll put the potential future connection to Minneapolis after Jackson Street on line 12. On that oral amendment, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion does prevail. Senator Sieben moves that Senate file 1903 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Senate floor.
Today.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I'd just add that Commissioner McDonough is here to testify in support, and also I did speak with MnDOT, and they didn't have any problems with the bill mm-hmm. as introduced.
Commissioner, you can speak if you want. Otherwise, we're going to pass your bill. Is that okay? Okay. On the Sieben motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you, Senator Sieben.
Thank you.
Moving right along, we have Senator Torres Rey. Senator Torres Rey, Senate file 1513.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to present this bill before your committee. And before I begin my presentation, I need your support in incorporating an amendment into this bill. This amendment was proposed in the Business, Industry, and Jobs last Tuesday, and it clarifies some language in the bill. We did not have a specification of what kind of projects are we talking about in this bill, and there was a tremendous concern in the committee, as you know, Mr. Chair, that we were going to apply this to all projects, including local projects, and Senator Back suggested that we clarify that this really includes only state or federal projects, and that we will also give the opportunity to local authorities to provide funding, and that will be something that we need to make sure we do so that the local projects or the projects themselves do not rely totally on state funding, which we will not have. And so this amendment, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, simply is attempting to clarify that.
Senator Dibble moves the A3 amendment. Further discussion on the A3 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Torres Rey, now on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, members. Before I begin, I really would like to thank the staff and Senator Dibble and you for helping me put this concept together. As you know, I have been working on this for a couple of years now, and we began the conversations with the Department of Transportation originally, and this was intended to really support a few business owners in my own district that were impacted by road construction at the time. And it has taken some time for me to move this project along, this legislation. And unfortunately, a lot of the business owners in my district can no longer be helped with this legislation because the project in my district has ended. But as we move forward with construction projects throughout the state of Minnesota, particularly now that we are going to be getting significant federal funding for construction projects, I really think that, and many of you probably agree, that we need to move forward with this legislation to support small businesses that are going to be impacted by road construction. And Mr. Chair, I'm going to try to move quickly through the bill explain the bill, but I have a couple of people who are here to testify to really share with you some of the experiences that they have gone through and why is that they are here to really present their perspective and share with you some of their stories. Senate file, my apology,
1513.
Mr. Chair, but I am missing some papers in my file, and I think they were taken out for conversation. So, Mr. Chairman, let me point out that you probably receive a copy of this particular report. And this was really the beginning of this effort. When we came before you last year, it became clear to us that we needed to work with the Department of Transportation to put together this concept in place, and that we really didn't quite know what needed to be done. And I personally was not very familiar with the process that existed to support small businesses and how transportation actually connected with small businesses. So thank you. So this report was put in place, and I hope you had an opportunity to review that. And so today what we're going to be talking is really the need to support small businesses with some funding so that they can begin to prepare for these tough times and really look at how they advertise their business, how they prepare themselves with their community so that communities are aware of the length of time of projects and issues like this. And with me, I have Mr. Eric Nathanson from the Metropolitan Consortium of Community Developers. I have Mr. Manuel Gonzalez, who owns a small business restaurant that was heavily impacted during the construction of Lake Street, and Ms. Linda Windsor, who represents the University Avenue Business Association, which, as you know, right now we are going to be dealing with a significant project along University Avenue, and she has been working with a number of businesses that are struggling to prepare for what is coming in their area. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to give the microphone to Mr. Nathanson so that he...
Senator Torres-Ray, can you make sure that all the testifiers sign in on the log sheet?
Yes.
In their testimony? The other thing to the testifiers, this bill's been heard several times. A lot of the people on this committee are on other committees that have kind of heard this, so if you can keep your remarks short. I really believe that this bill is going to go flying out of here into Finance Committee to find the money to get this program running. This program needs to happen. I think everybody on the committee would probably agree. Just a matter of finding the money on line 14 on page 3. So,
small matter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate that.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Eric Nathanson. I'm the Financial Resources Coordinator for the Metropolitan Consortium of Community Developers. We're a nonprofit business development group that provides access to capital and technical assistance for small businesses, and I will be very brief because I know that you have a lot of business to attend to. We want to indicate our strong support for this bill, and we think that it has an important applicability both to road projects and to transit projects. We've worked over the last few years with businesses that have been impacted by construction projects in Minneapolis. I see that Commissioner McLaughlin is here, and he's been very supportive of our efforts to assist businesses, particularly in Minneapolis, with county supported projects. Just a couple of points about the applicability of this and the problems faced by small businesses. What we found is the very smallest businesses that are tenants rather than the owners of their buildings are the ones that are most directly impacted by these projects. If you're a building owner, the transportation agencies know how to find you. If you're a tenant, they don't always know how to find you, and it's the tenant businesses that often bear the brunt of these projects. This bill establishes a business liaison function, which I think can be very useful. There need to be efforts to go door-to-door to inform tenant businesses as well as the owners of businesses, owners of buildings, about these projects and how they will impact them. Signage is very important. When we've surveyed small businesses, the one thing they tell us is that it's really important to have signage to show their customers how to find them during the road construction. We've helped with some marketing maps. If you can't get down Lake Street, you can get down 21st, and here's how you find us. That can help businesses. We've helped with some shared off-street parking. We've done some small loans to businesses. But the fact remains that businesses are impacted by these projects. What we find is that they may survive the immediate project, but they survive in a weakened form, and later they're going to bear the consequences of this. We found just last year in South Minneapolis, when some of the tax bills came due in part to some of the assessments that were needed for this project, that it really was a straw that broke the camel's back, and we found the 20 businesses on Lake Street were not able to survive. They'd survived the road project, but 2 years later they were weakened by that project, and they couldn't withstand the economic forces impinging on them. We're very encouraged by the stimulus and the $600 million plus that the state will be getting for transportation projects and the jobs that those will be creating. But if at the same time business is in these construction zones fail, we're going to be losing jobs, and this will offset the gain that the stimulus provides for us. So we think that this particular legislation can help in an important way, and we hope that you'll be able to move it forward and that this program will be funded. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Manuel Gonzalez will share with you his story very briefly. He has presented his story in previous committees, and as you know, it's a compelling story, but in the interest of time, he's just going to briefly mention.
Okay. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Manuel Gonzalez, and I own three restaurants in Lake Street, Menis Tortas, and I've been affected by the reconstruction for 4 years, but in two other restaurants, it wasn't too bad. The one it was very affected, it was the one in Lake and 27. I was there for 7 years, and 3 weeks ago, I have to close it because I believe it was struggling to try to survive to this reconstruction. And finally, when I thought I was okay 3 weeks ago, you know, with the last year economic situation, I couldn't keep my restaurant open. And I have a big problem in front of my restaurant. We have a big hole in the restaurant for 6 months, and nobody really went to take care of it. So I really struggle with the reconstruction. And, you know, I really think small business need help when there is a reconstruction. If I could have some help financially, I'd probably still have my restaurant open. And I'm still struggling, you know, even the reconstruction is over. So very briefly, that's my story. And my restaurants are located in the Midtown Global Market and Lake and Bloomington in the Mercado Central. And that's the best Mexican sandwich you can find anywhere.
Well, another road trip. We've got to go visit Mr. Rudin's favorite ice cream shop. So we'll start off at your place and get a sandwich and then go get ice cream later. So.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. How many employees did you lose because of the closure?
I lost around 9 employees.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, full time.
Mm-hmm. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gonzalez, in your neighborhood, were there other businesses that closed as well?
This is very funny, but in the time that I was there, I saw a lot of business just disappear. Around the corner, there were two Mexican restaurants that opened and closed. And, you know, I see business, Latino business, then disappear. But, see, nobody say anything, you know. So in that area, a lot of business just disappear. And it's very sad because the street looks beautiful now. I put a lot of money in that restaurant, and I'm still paying the loan. So.
That's tough. Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Torres-Ray, I eat a lot on University Avenue, and I don't eat a lot, but I eat a lot. And I hear the same thing. They're scared to death that the Central Corridor is going to drive a lot of these small places out of business. So this seems like a real appropriate way to look at, you know, and it's not just an urban thing either. There's been some reconstruction in my area where, you know, businesses have closed down for months. But I think they negotiated stuff with MnDOT on those issues. So it seems like a good proposal.
Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Torres-Ray, I need to be sure that you realize that this goes way beyond just Lake Street, because my constituent owns It's Greek to Me, which is on Lake Street. And it's by the way, Mr. Chair, that's where you should have your main entree. But It's Greek to Me. Denise, who's the owner and proprietor and manager of it, she had to give me special directions to be able to get to her restaurant when we needed to go there with some friends, because otherwise it would have been really a challenge to find the parking, to get to the parking in behind the restaurant. So it is really important. This is a very serious issue, and it goes beyond just the people who live around there. It goes to the owners and the proprietors that might be living anywhere. So thank you for bringing this forward.
Thank you,
Senator
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Torres-Ray, you have one more testifier.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Carlson, Senator Olsen. In fact, after reviewing all of this, it seems that the impact of this type of effort will be greater in greater Minnesota, because we don't have a lot of organizations like we do have in the metropolitan area working with businesses and kind of ready to support, you know, businesses like in University Avenue. We've had significant volunteer effort. And Ms. Windsor will talk about the incredible amount of time that she spent. But she belongs to an organization that serves that community. But in greater Minnesota, we don't have that. So this is really very important for greater Minnesota. And I have with me Ms. Windsor from the University Avenue Business Association, who will speak to you about their effort. Thank you.
Ms. Windsor.
Thank you. My name is Linda Windsor. Mr. Chair and members of the community, I'm here on behalf of the University Avenue Business Association to speak in favor of Senate File 1513. I'll make this brief, so I'll cut down my testimony. You've heard much about it, but as you know, businesses started feeling the pinch of the economic downturn in January 2008. That's been very clear out on University Avenue, as it is probably statewide. And within 18 months, construction on University Avenue will begin. Under normal construction circumstances, if you can call anything normal, but under normal construction circumstances, these businesses can expect to lose 20 to 50% of their revenue when their streets are torn up, streets and/or sidewalks. And that represents perhaps an insurmountable challenge for these businesses based on what the economy is doing and that. The University Avenue Business Association began organizing in August 2008 in preparation for construction of the light rail. It's now 134 members strong, and they worked very hard to put together the issues that they think are most important for small businesses to survive construction and thrive beyond. And I believe you got a copy of that. It's called the UABA Call for Action, UABA, University Avenue Business Association. And in that, basically, they've outlined the most important issues in preparing. And it includes ongoing organizing and outreach for small businesses, a construction mitigation liaison to work on behalf of small businesses with the Met Council, construction contractors, and other folks, specialized business assistance, including informational workshops, and a business resource center to provide marketing, energy efficiency, business planning, technical, financial, and legal assistance. Finally, individual marketing and existing small businesses and branding of University Avenue as a place with its own special mix of businesses, neighborhoods, diversity, and history. The light rail project is a nearly $1 billion investment, which the state has plenty invested in there, and its success really does depend on careful planning and design, not only of the trains and the tracks and the stations, but of the area that's going to surround it. And, you know, take a moment to think, if you have these wonderful trains going up and down, but you have struggling businesses, vacant storefronts, and blight and devastated neighborhoods, then imagine, with your help, trains full of riders and a viable and sustainable business environment with healthy neighborhoods and sidewalks full of people. That's the success of the light rail investment, is what is around it and what kinds of businesses can survive there. In closing, I'm here today to ask for your support for small businesses in the state of Minnesota as they all struggle in this unforgiving economy and face the major negative impacts of street and road construction. Small businesses employ thousands of people, and losing those businesses means loss of businesses and revenue. I'm really honored to be here, and I thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Windsor. Questions from the committee. Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, question. When we were in business, industry, and jobs, one of the concerns that was raised was we wanted to make sure that the state would not be on the hook for projects that were really primarily a result of county or city efforts. And so I noticed that, and I appreciate Senator Torres-Ray has made this change to her bill, which identifies a project as entirely or partially funded by state or federal funds on page 2, line 1. I'm wondering, Ms. Berezovsky, if putting that in the bill, is that sufficient? Was there any place else in the bill that needed to be referred to make that clear?
Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonoff, I just want to look this up to be sure that I'm saying the right thing, but the change was put into the definition of eligible transportation project. So that's the term that's used throughout the bill, and so it should apply throughout this initiative.
Ms. Berezovsky, thank you. Mr. Chair, Senator Torres-Ray, thank you for making that amendment.
Thank you, Senator Bonner.
Further discussion, Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Torres-Ray, I see here that the Commissioner of Deed will determine whether federal dollars are available for this purpose. Do you know that yet, whether that determination has been made?
Senator Dahl, Mr. Chairman, I do not. And that is why we've not been able to determine the amount, and we don't know. You know, we're going to work with the chairs to figure that out, but I am not aware of that information yet.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, I mean, let's, I'm just thinking out, you know, down the line here, when we get to the Central Corridor and all the businesses that are along there, how are we going to put that factor in there? I mean, there's a lot of businesses. How much is that going to increase the cost of the project? We're at $1 billion right now. Do we have to put money into every business along the corridor? Because obviously everyone's going to be affected. There's no doubt about that. And then there's good businesses, and there's businesses that are probably struggling already that, you know, are we supposed to go in and help out every one of those businesses? How are we going to pay for that? And has that been thought through before we put this forward?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Dahl, I think the intent here is that the state, this is precisely why we really want the state to be here, really administering this, because we don't know how much money is going to be available. So we want to make sure that the commissioner will really create a very equitable process and really plan with different regions, because University Avenue will not be the only one. So if we put all the money there and then we have other projects coming, then we will have a problem. The idea will be that the commissioner will develop a plan that will take into account all the projects that are being planned for the state. And then, you know, we're not going to have really all the money we need for every single project, but hopefully we will establish some priorities to address the most significant need. And the hope is that these commissioners will help us figure that out.
Senator Torres-Ray, I think what Senator Dahl is getting at is it going to be mandatory that you help every business? And I don't believe so. Otherwise, Senator Dahl's right. It would get to be pretty spendy.
Mr. Chair.
And I guess, Mr. Chair, what is going to be the criteria that is choosing, picking and choosing the winners, who gets funds, that has to be yet to be worked out. But, again, we've got a lot of businesses, and if we just take that one example of the Central Corridor, and this is supposed to be applied across the state, that's a lot of money Again, who's going to pick those choose the winners and the losers, and what criteria are you going to use to decide who should get funds and who shouldn't?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Dahl, you know, as you can see in the legislation, this funding will be available to the local government unit. I think how we frame this concept is that this money will become available for the state of Minnesota. Then it will be at the discretion of the commissioner to really figure out how this money could be distributed to the local units of government. They will apply, and then the department will determine, you know, needs. My assumption is that in this process, you know, the commissioner will see what projects are. That's why we put transportation very close with DEED working on this together, because I think they're going to have to map out, look at projections for the future, how many projects are going to be built, how many people are going to be impacted, the size of the region, and based on that, distribute this funding. I don't know if I will be open to work in kind of more concrete language before I get to finance, if you think that this language is not. I didn't want to use very prescriptive language precisely to leave that open, but if you think that we need to be more prescriptive, I'm open to suggestions.
Mr. Chair,
about this.
I don't want us to tie our hands on something like this, knowing the challenges we have already with transit and all these other issues, and now we're adding another one that clearly, if it was implemented to its fullest, would be a whole other department and a whole other budget that we'd have to address. It makes me a little nervous.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a little nervous about spending new money, too. I share Senator Dahl's concern. But so with that being the caveat, and Senator Torres Ray is well aware of, you know, as we all are, anyone around her who has an idea, a new idea, knows that's, you know, it's not a year, not necessarily a very conducive year to new ideas. But to respond to Senator Dahl, you know, I think the crux of this bill isn't about putting dollars into individual specific businesses. The crux of the proposal is to be working with businesses, doing really what road authorities and transportation authorities are doing right now, but maybe doing it better than they have been. Clearly, on Lake Street, it wasn't done very well. And that is trying to figure out, working with these small mom-and-pop entrepreneurial businesses that don't have a lot of margins and don't have a lot of ability to withstand the kind of pressure that the construction phase represents, so that there's an adequate communication plan with the surrounding community, with the customer base, so they know, come patronize our business. Let's have a Cuban sandwich at Manny's Tortas. By the way, that's the best sandwich they have. That's what I have whenever I go there, so I recommend it. You can't have that, Senator Bonoff, unfortunately, but it's very delicious. You know, maybe creating, you know, figuring out how to find adjacent parking, you know, and figuring out how customers can find their way to that parking, doing some sort of maps, maybe signage, you know, just a way to get these businesses through this construction phase, so that then they, once the construction is finished, once Central Corridor is up and running, or Lake Street, which is now beautiful, they're positioned to be more successful than ever before. But it's that phase in between, and granted, cities and other, you know, the state do some of this right now, but clearly they don't do it adequately because we've lost so many vital businesses on Lake Street.
Some do a very good job, Senator Dibble, and others need to improve their process. But maybe Mr. Peterson, did you want to say anything on behalf of MnDOT on this bill, or?
Mr. Chair.
Well, that normally means that they're okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Kelaz.
I have a question, and that is, are we allowed to spend deed money out of this committee? I think Senator Tomasoni's committee might object to that. So
Yeah, Senator Kelash, we're hearing this as a policy committee, and actually this money's going to come out of somebody else's budget, so.
So it's even easier to approve, is what you're saying.
Well, it's real easy for this committee. It's good policy, and we don't have to pay for it. What could be, I mean, that's. I think Senator Day might even vote for it, so. No? Well. Okay, I overstated the case.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Langset.
Mr. Chair, many years ago when I was the chairman of this committee, I flew in a helicopter over I-394 when it was being constructed.
They had helicopters then?
Yeah, they did.
Okay.
They didn't work very well. But as the commissioner was with and as we were flying over, he said 40% of the cost of the construction was for temporary construction to keep businesses in that corridor going. So I think there is already an awful lot of money being spent to try to keep the businesses going. And obviously, if you look just at the businesses themselves, obviously, you know, you make a very good argument for this. But I'm just wondering what in the world this would ever cost. Now, I think the way it's written, there would be a fund, and we would only put so much money in the fund, so we got some handle on it. But I think I've had businesses in my area call and ask if there was some they could get some money for this, and there wasn't. But I really wonder if anybody's got any kind of an estimate as to what this would cost per year. It could be in the hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yes, Senator Langset, I agree with you. It could be in the hundreds of millions of dollars. I think what Senator Torres-Ray wants to get in the books, though, is just kind of the first initial step. See if it kind of works out. We're going to hear from some of our MnDOT partners here how they anticipate moving forward with DEED to try to comply with this section. But you know, and granted, and I just know this from experience from a couple of the businesses in our neck of the woods when we were doing a little bit of road construction. MnDOT was up front, helped them with a lot of signage issues. They were very aggressive at trying to take care of the local business owners, so they didn't see a huge drop-off in their sales. You know, not all that successful, but they were doing kind of what this bill asks already. So I kind of like to hear from MnDOT and see what they have to say. Oh.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom O'Keefe. I'm with MnDOT Metro District. I chaired our advisory committee for this study. The bill is very much consistent with the recommendations of our report and the commitments that Commissioner Sorrell made in his letter accompanying the report. There are just a few issues of definition that we need to work through. I could talk about those more or if you'd like. Mm-hmm. Or I was going to mention also with Amendment A3 talks about projects entirely partially funded by state or federal funds, and just felt like I needed to point out that pertains to somewhere between many and most local agency projects, because it would include state aid projects and local federal aid projects as well. So it does have a big impact, and I'm not sure if we've heard from the local agencies on that yet.
Okay. As far as administering the program, you know, like Senator Langset said, there's going to be a fund of money. There's only going to be so many dollars in there. What is your read on what's going to happen with those dollars?
That part of the bill is really in the province of the Department of Employment and Economic Development.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's really their issue.
Okay. Well, I guess when we go back to Senator Tomasoni's committee, we'll find out. Thank you. Any more questions?
Mr. Chair, I'd move the bill.
Senator Olsen has moved that Senate File 1513 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. Further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
Senator Vandeveer. Senator Van Veer.
Mr. Chair, Senate File 1914 is intended to address a safety issue in primarily came to my attention in the city of Grant when the intersecting, and I do have a one-word oral amendment. Can I do that?
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that, Senator Vandeveer. Where is it, and what's the word?
Line 7, strike interchange, and insert intersection.
Senator Carlson moves on line 7, strike the word interchange and insert intersection. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what this bill does is simply, you can't, a 96 in Grant, the city of Grant, is a busy state highway, and if you're on an intersecting road and it's gravel, you can't get out on the highway because your wheels are spinning. And the city engineer, Diane Hanke, is here, and she could... I'm sure there's much more to say about it. But.
Okay. If you give us your name for the record, please.
Diane Hanke with the City of Grant. What's been happening is we've had some residents have safety concerns trying to access Trunk Highway 96 in the City of Grant. There are some vertical curves in the area which limit the site distance. Because of the existing conditions, the adjacent road is a gravel surface, and they're having problems getting traction to get onto the trunk highway and get up to the current speed limit. And so they've been working with MnDOT staff, and MnDOT is planning an overlay for Trunk Highway 96 in 2010. So the suggestion was if MnDOT could incorporate paving of some of these aprons as part of that project.
Mm-hmm. And Ms. Hanke, what did MnDOT have to say about that? Is
MnDOT,
it part of their design, or is it still in discussion?
Mr. Chair, could we have MnDOT speak for themselves? Or?
Sure. Is there somebody here from MnDOT that knows about this issue, or Mr. Rudin?
Eric Rudin, MnDOT Government Affairs. Mr. Chair, I'm not familiar with this particular case, but it would be our standard practice that when we do a repaving or reconstruction project, we would offer this option in partnership with local governments. However, we would need to have the local government participate in the cost, mm-hmm. typically, of this, mm-hmm. Which I think may be an issue in this circumstance.
Yeah. Senator Vandeveer, that's normally how, these road projects, I'm sure you know this, you know, there's always a local cost share when there's a trunk highway in conjunction with a city street or a township road or whatever.
And Mr. Chair, I'm fine with that. I think the issue was we didn't have, in discussing this with MnDOT, we had no assurance at all that anything was definitively going to take place.
Okay.
So it seems
all right. Ms. Hanke, does the City of Grant have a problem in the participation, fiscal participation?
It would be a consideration if they would consider it if MnDOT was willing to include it as part of their project.
Okay, here's what we're going to do. Senator Vandeveer, we're going to lay your bill on the table, okay? And in the meantime, Mr. Rudin, if you could contact the district engineer out that way and make sure that this gets taken care of without legislation, we'd appreciate it. How's that?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Olsen.
I do have one question because Nick Thompson, the former MnDOT area rep, has moved up, and Adam Josephson, the new guy, told me that this project was going to go this summer, that they were going to pave 96 this year.
Mm-hmm. So Ms. Hinke, is that... Do you know anything about that?
I'm not sure. It may have moved up. I thought it was 2010, but...
Because I was thinking it should be up in my area. No, he did say that he thought it's on their plan for this summer.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, that Senator Vandeveer is a powerful guy, I tell you. So
I just know people, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so Senator Vandeveer, are you comfortable with that? And then let us know here in a week or two what gets worked out between the city and MnDOT. And if we need to go forward, we'll go forward. We've had really good success with just working things out without the legislature.
That sounds good to me, Mr. Chair. I think that sounds workable to the city, too.
Okay. Well, then Senator Carlson moves that Senate File 1914 as amended be laid on the table.
Thank you.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Rudin. Next, we have Senator Vickerman and Senate File 1624. And members, this is an issue that's been in front of our committee on several occasions now. And well, if everybody could just remember to sign in and the log sheet up there, appreciate it. So, thank you. Members, we've heard this before, as I said, so I think that the testimony that we need is probably not, the full-blown testimony. So, Senator Vickerman.
Well, Mr. Chair, first I wanted to say I'm not here to talk about Highway 60. Usually that's all said in this committee was Highway 60. So that's taken care of itself.
Well, I thought we took care of the Highway 60 for you guys down there in that neck of the woods, and I'm glad to hear that we're not going to talk about it. So let's talk about a railroad.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, as you said, we've been here before, and all we're asking is forgiveness of this loan to the Buffalo Regional Railroad Authority. And, Mr. Chair, we have witnesses from down in my area that could explain this a lot better because they know whole details. So we'll start with you and state your name.
Mr. Chair, Senators, my name is Kyle Oldry. I'm the County Administrator for Rock County. This loan goes back to the late 80s. We acquired the rail line from the Chicago North line, and we received a loan for acquisition from MnDOT, along with some rehabilitation money from MnDOT in the early 1990s. The loan program was a match, provided the two counties, Nobles and Rock, and the Shippers Association at that time. The work was done in the early 90s. The acquisition and the car projections were agreed upon by the counties, the shippers, and MnDOT at that time. The car numbers have been drastically short of what the projections were, mainly because of the change in agriculture. We were an exporter of grain in Rock and Nobles County, but we've since done value-added products, ethanol, and livestock industry has grown dramatically. The line provides a vital service to the ethanol plant and to MSL Specialty, which is a food product for livestock, as well as safety clean. It runs about 1,000 cars a year. The original projections were in the mid 3,000 to 5,000 range. So we haven't made any payments on the line to the state. The counties, Nobles and Rock, and the shippers have all written off the loan. We're asking the state to do the same. The reason we're asking the state to do that is certainly there's some opportunities we feel in working with the federal government and trying to bring some monies in to maintain that line going forward. We're not asking you for any grant monies. We're not asking you for any additional loan monies. We're asking you to forgive a loan that's nearly 20 years old, and in one half of the loan is greater than 20 years. I believe you have the fiscal note in front of you showing a zero dollar impact. I know that MnDOT has expressed, to me at least, and certainly that they've expressed concerns to you as what precedent does this set. I think given the environment that we're in, I think that it's safe to say that we have paid back MnDOT to a certain degree by keeping the truck traffic off the road, both for the ethanol that we move, as well as MSL. Certainly the ag producers in our region feel that this line is extremely vital. It opens the markets up outside of the immediate area for the ethanol. We hook on the east to the Union Pacific and to the west to the Burlington Northern. So the line provides an extremely vital service to us. It's 41.4 miles long, and currently the shipper, Minnesota Southern Railway, Brent Polinchek, maintains the line, and it's becoming more and more costly to maintain it as the rehab is now nearing 15 to 20 years old. So we're asking for loan forgiveness so we can continue to pursue other options.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Brent, do you want to say a few words?
Yeah, Mr. Kalinchek.
Mr. Chairman and honorary members, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us. As Mr. Oldry mentioned, we're not asking for any new monies or anything at all. Just the ability to continue to move forward and try to secure a little bit of federal funding for some much-needed track work. My wife and I have operated this line now for the last 8 years. We have put 100% of our railroad revenue. Each of those years has gone back into the railroad. We have not received any compensation, paycheck, or anything for those 8 years because we wanted to, you know, keep the money in the railroad. On a yearly basis, we spend approximately 55% of our operating revenue goes right back into the track for things like ties and bridge repair and that kind of thing. We've kind of grown to love our little community and the customers that we work with. Our ethanol plant depends on us to be able to get their product to the markets where they can realize a little bit better profit. Our feed manufacturer that Mr. Oldry mentioned, because of us, they've been able to reach markets in Mexico, California, Utah, and Texas. And those are markets that they just simply would not be able to get into, you know, without us being able to move their cars. We'd like to, you know, continue providing the vital service that we believe that we provide. For our community. Thank you.
Thank you. And when we were talking the other day, and I think this is important for the committee to hear, you had between 90 and 100 rail cars of ethanol that you ship a year. Is that?
It's nearly 1,000. 900 to 1,000.
Oh, that's, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry. Losing zeros. It's a bad time to lose zeros. Yeah, it's 900 to 1,000, and it's about 3.5 semis on each car. Is that pretty close?
That's accurate, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So then we run the math, and now we're, you know, 3,500 truck trips every year on the roads if that rail line's not there. So, and one of the other reasons why they're here again today is that, you know, there is this federal money, this recovery money that's out there. Unfortunately, this line is not going to be able to participate in that because they had that debt hanging over their head. Anyway, we're going to hear from Mr. Gardner about all the money here in a few minutes. So, questions from the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and, you know, I'm very supportive, and especially of these small rail lines around the state, especially ones down in Senator Vickerman's neck of the woods, especially if they're bringing ethanol to market. The only concern I might have is the fact that, you know, this is money that won't be repaid to the Minnesota Rail Service Improvement Revolving Loan, and so then those funds won't be available to other of the small rail lines that. Mm-hmm. Might need loans to make those improvements. And then I wonder if all the folks with loans now are going to come forward and ask for those loans to be converted to grants, and then we won't have anything in the Mercy revolving loan account. So I'm just I'm slightly concerned on those bases. So I was wondering, Senator Vickerman, if we can respond to those concerns, the fact that the Mercy dollars, you know, they revolve and they go to other short lines for their rail improvements, and if we don't repay, then the fund is that much shorter, and then we might trigger a whole bunch of other folks coming in and asking for their loans to be converted to grants, and then we'll have nothing in the Mercy account.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble, go back in history a little bit. This is not just a rural metro. I was the deciding vote on the Hiawatha Line for $100 million for the study. I did that. And I could have voted no on it because I'm from rural Minnesota, but I could see the vision of how great that was. And I voted for every other railroad this year because I think rail is the way it's going to be. And so,
Mr. Chair,
I know the other people, but I know I drive up. I drive up on 169. Mm-hmm. I see a motorcycle building sitting there that cost, and I was here when that was put together, $8 to $9 million, and it just sets absolutely empty. So we forgive a lot of things. They just want to be able to use this to move ethanol. And hopefully things will pick up so it can make some headway. Brent is putting his own money into it. You know, I'm not so sure I want to put money into something. At least I never had a chance of ever owning or having to say it was my property. And I think that's a plus. And I know that the other people might, but you know, the total package is of all the other ones is not that great amount of money compared to what we're doing. There's in the bill today, there's $10 million for another short line in the bonding bill that they want to do. So,
Mr. Chair, this is not a metro-rural thing. I didn't say anything about metro-rural. These Mercy grants go to rural, a lot of rural. There's other rural short lines that might not get these dollars. So I didn't raise metro-rural. I'm talking about rural issues only.
Mr. Chair, mm-hmm. Senator Dibble, I think that the harsh reality for us is it'll never be paid back. And whether it's written off at this point, and we have the opportunity to pursue some other funding to try to maintain the line and keep it at least operational for the limited cars we have, or if at some point down the road it just goes away, I'm not sure that at any point the money will ever be paid back. And it was a lot of it is we based projections that simply didn't materialize in the late 1980s and early 1990s, sir.
Mr. Chair,
okay, we'll
just have to be ready to say yes or no to other folks who come in with the same request. I mean, right. It's a policy decision that we have to make, a judgment call.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to ask Mr. Gardner to come up and provide a little bit of testimony. I think that well, Mr. Gardner, I think you understand the concerns here. Can you kind of give us the department's perspective?
Sure. Bill Gardner, MnDOT Freight Rail and Waterways, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Just a couple of quick comments for your consideration. From a practical standpoint, this request really wouldn't impact the program, as has been indicated. These loans have been out for many years. We haven't received any repayments. We're certainly not counting on the money for new projects in the short term. But the issue for us is the precedence that is established. We have about $9 million with other folks, both public and private, right now that are outstanding in loans. We receive about $1.2 million per year in repayments. We currently have about a $4 million balance in the program, so it's a pretty critical portion of the revenues that we have to issue new loans along with additional capital from the state. And so we do have some concerns about that. So whether this is a grant program or a loan program or some mix thereof, you know, we want a sustainable program that we can be able to respond to the needs that are out there. And we do have a significant backlog of needs at this point.
Senator Dole. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm curious when, you know, this is a, what, 20-year-old issue or something you said? That's when this loan was made? In the projections made out when you decided to give the loan, I don't know who would have been responsible at that point, but was it, there was never any repayment, so was there some fault in the application process that there wasn't going to be an ability to pay back, or what kind of conditions came together to cause this to happen in the first place?
Mr. Chair, Senator, it's my understanding that the original projections were a collaborative effort amongst the Rail Authority, the shippers along the line, as well as the state. And there were some projections, and there was a payment schedule that was laid out. And I think it's, as the previous testifiers have indicated, economic conditions generally have changed. Some changes in the movement of grains and other commodities impacted the line. And you know, beyond that, probably the shippers themselves would have the best, and the Rail Authority, the best insight into that. But the reality is we haven't had payments. We haven't pressed for payments. We think the authority and the operator have made good efforts to try to improve the service, and they've had modest success in terms of generating shipping activity. We certainly support continued rail service in this corridor and the attempts to improve service and attract more shippers.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator.
And of the other loans that you have out there, are you any of those at risk? I mean, are all those look like they're solvent, being able to pay back on time?
For the most part, we do have some other loans that we haven't been receiving repayments on, where we should have according to the original schedule. But for the most part, we do get repayments. And as I indicated, that's a pretty significant amount of money, about $1.2 million per year on the loans that are out there currently.
I'm sorry, and Mr. Chair, what was your name again? I'm sorry.
Bill Gardner.
Mr. Gardner. $1.2 million on $9 million? That was the total fund, is $9
million? That's currently the balance of the outstanding loans.
Okay, and $1.2 is delinquent?
No, $1.2 are the repayment proceeds that we're currently receiving.
So, Mr. Gardner, this is kind of an exception to the rule as far as the history of the program, is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I believe this is the first request for forgiveness of the loan. Mr. Chair, I would also like to point out, though, even if there is forgiveness or conversion to a grant, it's our understanding in talking to Department of Finance and the AG's office that there would still be a continuing state interest in this property. So if down the line there was a sale or even abandonment, then that issue would have to be dealt with in terms of some measure of proceeds back to the state. And also there's a continuing federal interest here. There was some federal money originally in the project as well.
Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Gardner, it seems to me that a grant would certainly be a smarter way to go than forgiveness, because once a loan is forgiven, it's off the books. And if it's a grant, then we would have some means to make a change going forward if the economic situation changed. That's one thought. And then could you remind me, Senator Vickerman, given there hasn't been any payment on this for so long, why is this needed?
I'll ask the expert here, because it was in before I got elected.
Mr. Chair, Senator, what we're looking to do is pursue some federal dollars. And to apply for federal dollars, we're disclosing the debt that we currently have on the line. And with that debt that we haven't been able to service for 20 years, ma'am, we're not received very well in the federal side.
Mr. Chair, okay, I understand. And then is it your understanding that if you had a line item as you pursued this federal money as a grant, then you would be looked upon favorably?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I think if we can show we're not carrying a debt load, I don't see how that would be held against us in the grant or in an application process. But currently, showing it as outstanding debt makes it virtually impossible to move forward.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Ogre, you also, and Mr. Gardner just said that you guys owe the feds some money too. How much is that?
Looking at the old agreements, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. Mr. Chair, looking at the old agreements, it's $350,000 was, I'm not sure what the program was called in 1993, but it was part of the rehab of 1993. And $350,000 of $1.8 million was federal money.
Okay. Senator Debel.
Mr. Chair, I'm wondering if it's possible to convert the terms of the loan similar to, some of the programs we have in, like the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, where a loan effectively doesn't have to be repaid, and that can be reflected that way on their books for their goal, which is to qualify for these federal dollars, you know, until some triggering event. You know, we have a like a down payment assistance loans or home improvement loans that you know, never really have to be repaid unless the home is sold or the owner dies or something like that. Is there a term of a loan that can be changed to so we don't set this precedent in the Mercy Fund and trigger a whole bunch of short lines coming in looking for forgiveness and just evaporating that fund into nothing, yet still allow this particular line to qualify for these federal dollars they're looking for, which we should try to help them do. That would be great.
Mr. Gardner, is there any creativity that can happen here to help us kind of out of this?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we're certainly willing to sit down and try to renegotiate the terms of the loan and to some advantage for the Rail Authority. You know, as I indicated, we haven't been pressing for payment. We have various types of entities that have loans with us. Some are entirely private railroads. Some are through rail authorities. Some are private individual shippers. And those agreements all vary somewhat. Some we have mortgages with. Some we don't. We're certainly willing to work this out, sitting with Department of Finance, and see if we can come to some mutually beneficial solution.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Vickerman, I actually served on the Minnesota Valley Regional Rail Authority Board when I was a county commissioner. And one of my concerns is that we might be trying to prop up a railroad that is not economically viable. And one of the concerns I have is if we do this, is there some potential that you'll be looking for federal loans? If you're looking for federal grants, that might be different, but I wouldn't want you to go back to the federal government and engage in another loan that you might not be able to repay or that the state might be asked to guarantee. And so I hope that your legislation would be restricted to that, that if you're going to go to the federal government for funds, it would be on a grant basis only. And I think there should be restrictions on your ability to borrow, honestly. I think we shouldn't encourage you to continue borrowing money to keep this railroad operating.
Mr. Chair, Senator, if I may, I absolutely agree. We're not interested in incurring or encumbering any more debt on the line. And what we're looking at is having the shipper make application for the federal monies. And the shipper then would apply for the grant rather than the Rail Authority. The Rail Authority, as it stands right now, is not interested in encumbering any debt. We've written our portion of the debt off from Rock County. Nobles County's done the same, as have the shippers. So we're looking at a different approach, and it would be grant monies directly to the shipper to make the necessary maintenance and improvements to the rail line. Senator, thank you.
But Mr. Chair, that might lead to further guarantees. You know, would the shipper then ask for a Rail Authority guarantee or state guarantee? And those are the kinds of relationships I'm concerned about when you've come back to our committee to ask for forgiveness of a loan.
Mr. Chair, Senator, as Mr. Oldry indicated, we are not interested in any kind of further loan or anything like that. It is all grant that we're after. Our little railroad that my wife and I operate is, with the exception of this debt here that we're asking for forgiveness, we are debt-free. Our railroad, which is a Minnesota corporation, owes my wife and I, you know, some money for some of the equipment acquisitions, but that is it. We are 100% debt-free at this time. And as far as asking for loan money or something like that, our car movement and the amount of track work and stuff that we have to do to keep operating would not allow us to be making any kind of payments. And so that is why we would never, you know, seek any kind of further loan stuff. It would simply be grants on the federal level, which are out there and available to small businesses such as ours for strictly infrastructure improvements. The money could only be used for working on and improving our track. It's not to be used for operating expenses, equipment acquisitions, any of that. It's simply for infrastructure, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And it is all grant funds that we would be seeking.
Mr. Olsen,
I'd move this bill.
Senator Deville.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would even support the idea of finding some other fund external to the Mercy Fund, for the purpose of replacing or forgiving this loan. My concern is if we set a precedent from inside the Mercy Loan Fund. I'm just thinking about all the other potential within this Mercy Loan revolving loan account. You know, that won't be realized with the other short lines that we want to rehab. I think it's a good program, and the short lines have been pretty supportive of it, and just precious little money in there and great need, and that would be then denied for the future. So even going out external, finding some, however much we're talking about, to replace the loan funds for the purpose of, forgiving this debt. I'm just trying to think creatively and still try to protect the precedent so that we don't ultimately start down a path on this that would make the Mercy Fund obsolete.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I'll remove my motion.
Senator Olsen has moved that.
I'd like to remove that motion. Not renew.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Remove.
You withdrew your yes. motion. Senator Vickerman, we're going to have to get somebody on the committee to make a motion here, but here's kind of what I'd like to do. I'd like to take and send your bill to finance because they need to talk about this a little bit. In the meantime, if you and the folks for the line and Mr. Gardner can kind of get together and maybe talk about something a little more creative, I'd appreciate it. I think that there's Senator Vickerman, there's another bill for another line that's in. Senator Sharon has one. And I know of at least three others that would like to put legislation in. So I think that, Mr. Gardner, if you've got any creative ideas to kind of help us keep, these operators operating, because I don't want those 3,500 ethanol trucks out on the road. And I think we all agree that it's better to send it by rail. But, this is a real sticky wicket here. I don't want to degrade the fund. Senator Rest.
I'll move the bill.
Okay, I don't want to degrade the fund, but we want these operators to continue to move. So let us know what the discussions come about, because we're going to take care of this next year regardless. I mean, for all of this fund, okay? Senator Rest has moved that Senate File 642 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. Further discussion on that motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The ayes have it. Motion does prevail. Thank you, Senator Vickerman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you very much.
He said 624.
What did I say?
642.
Oh.
That dyslexia thing.
God, that's bad. Is Senator Phoebe? Senator Phoebe, Senate File 1467. If we can get Mr. Arsenal up here right away. Members, we're going to move real quick here through the rest of this agenda. Senator Phoebe, do you have the rural residential district speed limit bill worked out now with Mr. Arsenal and our friends from law enforcement?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, thank you. And
great. Senator Deville moves at Senate File 1467. Gosh darn it. I guess we have an amendment.
I have two amendments.
Okay. All right. Well, members, this is an issue that we've heard before, and I'm glad that MnDOT and everybody has kind of come to an agreement here. So these amendments are going to put the bill into the shape that Senator Phoebe needs it.
Mr. Chairman,
Phoebe, can
I move the First Amendment?
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay. This is, I thought I was already before this committee once for my hazing.
We'll give it to you again if you want.
I thought I was done with that.
Okay, we're going to do the A1 first. If we could have both of them passed out, the A1 and the A3.
And the A3.
Senator Rest has moved the A1 amendment. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail.
Chairman, I move the A3.
Senator Rest has moved the A3 amendment.
Aye.
On the A3 amendment, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion does prevail.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rest.
I move the bill as amended.
Senator Rest has moved the bill as amended. Senator Fulby, if you could give us your best 2 minutes, and then I want to hear from Mr. Arsenault, and I want to make sure that law enforcement is okay with this.
I will probably give you less than 2 minutes,
okay.
Mr. Chair. This is a bill that you've seen before. It's some, for me, kind of a carryover from Senator Betsy Worgen. It's something that she started on last year that I picked up this year. Senator Jungbauer has been wonderful, pushing and helping move it along and working on it, having to do with rural residential district speed limits. And with that, I'm going to pass it over to Mr. Arsenault.
Mr. Arsenault.
Before I get cut off.
Mr. Chair, Bernie Arsenault with MnDOT. I'm the Division Director for Policy, Safety, and Strategic Initiatives. Mr. Chair, as you know, we were requested to do a speed limit study. There are a lot of issues on this, and rather than go through any detail on this in order to be time efficient here, I'd just like to say that we're pleased that the collaborative process that was utilized for this effort yielded an outcome that's supported by Minnesota County Engineers Association, City Engineers of Minnesota, Minnesota Association of Townships, and law enforcement, and MnDOT would like to thank all those that participated.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Jeff Bean, the police chief for the City of Elk River. I'm here to give the voice of support from law enforcement. Speeding complaints are paramount in our city nowadays. In Elk River, for example, two-thirds of our 44-square-mile city are urban residential. So you have our full support in this bill, and we hope for its passage.
Well, thank you, Chief. Chief, you're going to be able to enforce all the speed zones, whether you bring them down or move them up.
Correct.
Okay, great. Senator Fulby, let's hear from your other testifier.
I can make this very brief. Jim Dickinson, City Administrator, City of Andover. From the perspective of frontline staff individual that deals with a number of questions, this will certainly help in answering those questions. The residents just ask why 55 miles an hour in my rural residential district. So we just request that this continue to move on, and we look for your support. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. Is there anybody here that wants to testify in opposition to this bill? Didn't think so. On the rest motion that Senate File 1467 as amended be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Senate floor. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion does prevail.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. Senator Koch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I've got Senate File 1171. And members, what this is currently we have an exemption in the state.
You have the same problem I do, Senator Koch. It's 1172. My dyslexia, I always get the numbers mixed up. But don't worry about it. Staff has.
Let's really move Senate File
right.
1172.
Okay.
Okay. And what this is currently if you commercial drivers have to commercial motor vehicle drivers that have a CDL have to comply with federal regulations. We exempt drivers from the state DATWA, it's Drug and Alcohol Testing and Workplace Act, because it's duplicative, let's say that. But when we have that law, we didn't include ourselves. We didn't include the state of Minnesota. So what this bill does is include the state of Minnesota and entities that if they have to comply with the federal regs, they're exempt from the state regs just to avoid some confusion. And we're hoping to actually save a little money and perhaps some administrative hassle with this one. So, Mr. Chair, I'll move the bill, but if you'd like to hear from Mr. Yoakum.
Mr. Yoakum, I think we got a good explanation here, so we appreciate you being here. Thank you. Senator Koch has moved Senate File 1172 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Senate floor. You're not having a problem with this, are you, Mr. Yoakum?
Agency
good.
Sir.
All right. Thank you. On the Koch motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion does prevail. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Yoakum. Next up, we have Senator Carlson. We have, this is the Department Motor Carriers and Highway Provision. And Senator Carlson, once again, this is, well, we have the major here, and we'll let you kind of briefly explain this. And this is basically, members, a cleanup bill, a lot of conformity issues. Senator Carlson, Senate File 1876.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 1876 is, as you mentioned, an agency bill. And what it does is it provides a lot of cleanup. And we'll go through each of the 58 sections here.
I bet not.
But what I do have is I have Mr. Gene Halverson, mm-hmm. who is from the Office of Freight and Commercial Vehicle Operations. He's the self-described guru of MnDOT's trucking regulations, and Ms. Erica Earhart. She's an attorney from the Office of Freight and Commercial Vehicles from MnDOT, and she is the person who drafted the bill. And I'm going to rely on Mr. Halverson to go through briefly some of the more salient points of the 58 sections.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for coming today, Mr. Halverson. And you know that we're kind of pressed for time here a little bit. If you can hit the parts that kind of the high points, and if there's any controversial items, which I know that you don't put in your bills, so.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. Gene Halverson from MnDOT. The majority of the portion of the bill, sections 4 through 18, are concerned with truck weights. These are not increases in weights. This is cleanup language for weights that were put into statute in the last few years, several of them last year, all weights that require permits. For instance, last year was the ag products permit that would allow heavier weights. And so in doing that, there are some things in the current statute that needed to be tuned up, cleaned up to make it work properly. And so that's what most of this is about. There is one section in there about breakaway brakes on implements of husbandry. Breakaway brakes are already required. Brakes are required at certain weight thresholds, and all this is doing is on vehicles, on implements of husbandry manufactured after 2011, January 1, 2011, new vehicles would then be required to have these breakaway brakes if required by statute to have service brakes, regular brakes. We've worked with the Minnesota Trucking Association. They're in favor of this. We worked with the County Engineers Size and Weight Committee, the State Patrol. Townships were contacted. This makes it much easier for truckers and for enforcement in that the way it would now be written is that if a road is paved, it's a 10-ton road. If it's unpaved, a gravel road, it's a 9-ton road. The road authority would still have the ability and the right to post a road if they didn't feel it was up to 10-ton standards, for instance. It also would change the road postings during spring load restriction. 10-ton roads would be 10-ton unless they were signed at a lesser weight. Gravel roads would be 9-ton roads. They would be automatically 5-ton during road posting unless signed to a different weight. So if they felt there was a road that could carry more than 5-ton during spring load restriction, they could boost it up if they wanted to.
But, Mr. Halverson, the changes are that it's not an automatic restriction. They have to go out and post.
Mr. Chairman, actually, on gravel roads, they would be automatic 5-ton unless they were posted to a different limit. And that's current statute right now.
And the paved road?
Mr. Chairman?
And the paved for paved road?
Paved right now has a goofy thing in there that says mm-hmm. other than Portland cement concrete roads, roads that do not have a sign on them indicating the weight are automatically 5-ton.
Okay.
So it's a little easier to understand and it would be, I think, a better system. Mm-hmm.
There's one section in there about the deposit of revenue from the ag bill last year. It appears now, the way it's written, that all the money has to go to the Trunk Highway Fund. Some of the counties weren't real happy about that because they're saying, look, we're issuing permits for our roads, mm-hmm. and then we have to turn the money over to MnDOT that, or to the state. Mm-hmm. And so this would allow them for the permits that they would issue themselves for their roads to keep that money and use it in their funding. Mm-hmm. As I stated, there's one section in there about bales. We issue permits for overdimensioned loads of bales, and we've had it in our statute that couldn't operate on the interstate, which really caused problems. You come out of Wisconsin, you get off the interstate, I-90, and now you have to dump into the state roads and run clear across our state and get back on I-90 at South Dakota border. It doesn't make sense. And I checked mm-hmm. with Federal Highway, and there's no prohibition against us doing that because it's not weight-related. It's only dimension-related.
Okay.
That's pretty much my area, Mr. Mm-hmm. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Eric Earhart from Minnesota Department of Transportation's Office of Freight and Commercial Vehicle Operations, and I'll just go over a few more of the highlights. About 30 sections of the bill have to do with cleanup of household goods provisions. Last session, we took out, we sort of reformed the way that we regulate household goods movers, and in doing that, we got rid of some requirements that no longer apply to any carriers that exist in the state. So we went through in the last few months, and we've cleaned up a lot of this language. We see this as strictly non-substantive, just cleanup. There are also another 7 sections that deal with the way we incorporate certain sections of the Code of Federal Regulations. In an audit of our programs, the feds had some questions about how we, what words we use to do that. We've just changed the language that we use to incorporate those so that there's no question that we've properly incorporated. Then there are an additional 4 sections that deal with USDOT number requirements. What we are doing here is requiring that carriers that have a USDOT number need to put it on their vehicles just to help with identifying those vehicles should something happen on the road. We've given them a delayed effective date until August 1st, 2011 to comply with that, and this is very consistent with the federal requirements, and it will just make it easier for enforcement or reports of incidents on the roads. One other section I'll point out has to do with medical waivers. That's section 34. Currently, there's a 3-year bar for us to give a waiver to someone whose driver's license has been suspended for any reason, even after their license has been reinstated. And what this does is just kind of focus that list of the kinds of reasons that people's licenses have been suspended to strictly driving-related offenses that would cause that 3-year bar to be invoked.
Those and funny enough, that was the only section of the bill that I was concerned about. So, with that, Senator Carlson moves his bill, Senate File 1876, to be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Senate floor. MnDOT also has told us that there is no fiscal impact on this bill. So we're going to send it straight to the floor, Senator Carlson.
Thank you.
Okay. Further questions from the committee? Seeing none on the Carlson motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Senator Dibble. Thank you, Senator Carlson. And thank you, Mr. Halverson and Ms. Earhart.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 1667 provides for designation of MnDOT, the Commissioner of MnDOT, as the authority for developing passenger rail in Minnesota. Currently, there is a little bit of passenger rail authority, and so this just simply adds to that. That's a very simple language that allows the Commissioner to do some negotiation with freight rail and establishes some Amtrak service in the state. As Mike Schadauer will describe, as we had a lot of discussion in this committee of late, passenger rail and intercity passenger service may well be a real growing opportunity in the coming year. And so what this does, Mr. Chair, is establishes the commissioner's duties and responsibilities
similar to authority already in statute with respect to other kinds of rail, most specifically commuter rail. And so the commissioner's duties are described in Section 1, some of the authorization agreements to enter into agreements with joint power boards, as well as described in Section 1, allowing the commissioner to apply for federal funds. Section 3 allows the commissioner to carry out some specific activities. Section 4 has to do with some provisions that relate to commuter rail and not necessarily passenger rail. And then some of the stuff that we have already identified in the commuter rail portion of the statutes, we actually delay and ask, this is in Section 5, and ask the commissioner to come back with some recommendations for our statutes next year. With that, Mr. Chair, we have Mike Schadauer from the MnDOT Office of Transit, who can talk a little bit about what's going on with the with MnDOT vis-a-vis the Federal Railroad Administration, and why we might need this established in statute so we're ready to receive potential grants that might come yet this year.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Schadauer. Please state your name for the record and continue with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Mike Schadauer. I'm the director of the Office of Transit at MnDOT. And I'll just give you a little briefing on activity that leads us to feel that we need this bill to give us these duties and powers. As you all know, the legislature passed last year a bill that instructed MnDOT to carry out a statewide freight and passenger rail plan. So that process is underway. We've started it with a policy advisory committee meeting that happened last week, and that outreach will continue over the next month and a half with meetings across the state. And that plan will be going on throughout the course of this year with a completion date of the end of this year. As you all know as well, there's been some new federal money that came to the world for passenger rail in the United States. So there was a Rail Safety Improvement Act last fall that put $3.7 billion in authorized funds over the next 5 years, and then the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act that has now put $8 billion forth. There's a lot of activity around those things, and you've heard many corridors that are interested in participating in that. This particular part of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act is different than the other transportation parts in that it's not a use it or lose it situation. It will be a competitive program that MnDOT will be working through, and we will use the information that we are learning along the way in the rail plan to help us decide what should be applied for projects for grants. The way that the rail plan is going, let me back up a step, and the way that the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act works for this passenger rail money is that they are starting a program from scratch. So the Federal Railroad Administration must come out with the rules of this program. And there's a couple different dates coming up. April 18th, they're going to come out with their strategic plan. In mid-June, they will come out with their guidance for grant applications. And one would expect at least a 90-day period after that before any applications would have to be made for grants. That will allow us to use their state rail plan preliminary work as part of the information that can help us decide what projects we should apply for. MnDOT's working closely not only with many stakeholders on the rail plan, but we've also invited a group that we call the Passenger Rail Forum to help us decide what projects should be applied for grants prior to the completion of that rail plan. So, again, looking at that expected grant application date of approximately June or later, we should be able to use the results of the rail plan work. We should be able to inform our forum participants about what we're learning in the rail plan, and then they can use that information to recommend projects to MnDOT to forward as grant applications. We would continue to use that rail forum after the rail plan is done to continue to advise us in that role and to help us address any new rail issues that come out in the future. So just to, in conclusion, to keep you on your calendar here, MnDOT is certainly in support of this bill. We are ready to assume the duties that this bill gives us, and we would like to move forward in addressing passenger rail in Minnesota.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a few other folks who'd like to come forward, Commissioner Earhart, Commissioner McLaughlin, and Commissioner McDonough from the various counties that and authorities that might be touched by passenger rail at some point in the future. I guess Jim McDonough had to leave for a family matter.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Chair, Senator, and Senators, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to come here today. I'm Dan Earhart, and I'm an Anoka County Commissioner. I'm the Chair of the Rail Authority for Anoka County. I'm Chair of North Star. I am a member of the forum that has been put together by MnDOT. And I am also the vice chair of the Northern Lights Express, the passenger rail proposal from Minneapolis to Duluth. And I want to make this very brief. I know the time is in your interest here that we want to keep this down. I am speaking in behalf of the Northern Lights Express, the passenger rail line from Minneapolis to Duluth. And what we want to do here and see passed in this legislation is allowing us to proceed in working closely with MnDOT. We've had that experience in working with them in North Star, and we look forward to that close association, a very positive association, with working with MnDOT to further these projects. And certainly we want to be able to prevent any kind of problem that we might have in receiving federal money because of statutory or administrative barriers that would be in place that would prohibit that that kind of action and working with the Congress. Again, I want to say that our relationship with MnDOT, with North Star, and with other projects has been very positive, and we look forward to that relationship with MnDOT in moving passenger rail projects ahead and want to clear any matters that might interfere with that. So unless there's any questions, I thank you for hearing me today, and I'm certainly encourage the passage of this bill.
Mr. Chair, we have Peter McLaughlin here.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. I'm Peter McLaughlin, Chair of the Hennepin County Regional Railroad Authority and Chair of the County's Transit Improvement Board. As Senator Dibble indicated, Commissioner McDonough from the Ramsey County Board was also here, and he would join me in these comments today. He's a member of the County's Transit Improvement Board, and he was here to be supportive of this legislation, as I am. It's important, I think, to note just a couple things. One, this gives MnDOT clear authority to apply for this money, which is the fact that the money was included in the Economic Recovery Act was a late-breaking development, and it transformed high-speed passenger rail from a hope to a real possibility in the immediate and intermediate future here. And so this is going to set this state up to be able to apply for that money, get the work done to allow us to be competitive, and this will be a competitive process at the federal level. I would note that both the NLX line and the high-speed line from Chicago will go through the state of Wisconsin, so having a DOT designation I think is appropriate because they're going to have to be negotiations with the counterpart DOT in the state of Wisconsin to get those projects done. The other thing that's incorporated in the bill is a directive to integrate passenger rail investments and planning with other transit in the metropolitan area, and that's very, very important because we want to have an integrated system, and this would set in motion that process. So I come here today on behalf of the County's Transit Improvement Board and the Hennepin County Regional Railroad Authority to speak very enthusiastically in favor of this legislation.
Thank you, Commissioner McLaughlin. Okay, let's go Senator Day, Dahl, and Rest.
Mr. Chair.
And Coke.
First off, I don't, Mr. Chairman and Senator Dibble, I don't have problems with your bill, but what about? I'd like to make a verbal motion though, that would
I think
delete the first sentence. Delete the first sentence.
Beat me to it. That's what I was going to do to it.
Oh, okay.
I support you.
Because it just, you know, it could just start where the commissioner is responsible and. And the first sentence doesn't.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I agree with Senator Day that we don't have to have findings
which is what this is.
Mr. Chair.
Because the whole rest of it is saying exactly what the response, mm-hmm, the governmental right. responsibility is. Mm-hmm. So we don't need that first sentence.
Senator Dabe moves to strike the language on 1.7, 1.8, and 1.9 through the period. On that motion,
Mr. Chair, I'm fine with that motion. Mm-hmm. The reason that appears is because the same language appears. It's a parallel construction to the authority that's given to the commissioner for commuter rail.
We don't need it, though.
So you can go delete the commuter rail section as well.
Well, we'll have to have a bill to fix that one then.
All right.
All right. On the day motion to amend, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion does prevail.
And then a follow-up.
Okay, Senator Day.
And I don't know who all knows this, but who is ahead of the light rail, and who's ahead of North Star? Who is the point person, or is? Mm-hmm. I guess what I'm trying to find out. I can remember when I tried to do the ramp meters, I got down to, and it was like somebody handles buses, and somebody handles trains, and somebody handles passenger trains, and whatever. This bill will not put them all under the Transportation Commissioner, or would it?
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, Senator Day, this won't put, there's, you know, we distinguish between light rail and commuter rail and passenger rail. This right. speaks only specifically to passenger rail. And, of course, it would depend, of course, on where exactly the particular facility is. But light rail, Hiawatha, is even though it was constructed by MnDOT, it's operated and owned by the Met Council. The North Star corridor, even though it's going to reach out of the metro area, it'll be operated by the Met Council. And that's mm-hmm. what okay. we provided for in statute. This I assume, will continue to exist under the authority of MnDOT. But mm-hmm. we can always change that.
I thought we were giving the authority to Mr. Schreiber, but I was... he likes
take
that
it.
Idea.
Take it.
He's retiring, you know, so we're going to give him something to do. Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Dibble, for bringing this bill forward. On the last subdivision 6 on lines 2.27, can you just explain the rationale behind that a little bit more?
These are in the 8-2.
Mr. Chair. Yeah. This is asking for the commissioner to take a look at, you know, those instances where intercity passenger rail might be coming through a particular part of the metropolitan area and be used as, you know, for mobility, similar to mobility purposes that commuter rail might be used for in parts of the metropolitan region itself. And so if it's behaving and enacting as if though it were commuter rail in some measure or respect, if there is some policy or funding or equity issues that we need to be making sure we're mindful of.
I wonder if when it refers to state operating subsidy mechanisms, if it should be state and local to reflect the...
Yeah, that's a good idea. Mr. Chair, that's a good suggestion. One off.
So I would move on line 2.27 to insert after state the words and local, and then change subsidy to subsidies.
Senator Sieben, could you, on line 2.27?
Correct.
Could you state your amendment again?
After the word state, insert and local.
State, so it reads state and local operating. On the Sieben motion to amend, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you. And Senator Dibble, are you ready to move your bill?
Yes.
Oh, Mr. Senator Dahl. I forgot. I'm sorry.
Forgot
Senator Dahl
about
had a
me,
question.
Mr. Chair. Thank you. Senator Dibble, the report, knowing how long these projects take to develop, and I'm sure that we're going to start to see the status of passenger rail in the state evolve over the next few years. Shouldn't we maybe have an annual report for a few years at least, not instead of just one singular report on what's the status today? I think we've got a lot of things that have been put in the pipe this year just in studies, and probably be a few more coming up in the next couple of years. If we're looking at the status of passenger rail in the state, makes sense to me that we would want to kind of review it at least once every year, I don't know, for the next 3 to 5 years at least.
Mr. Chair, I see that as a somewhat separate, I agree with Senator Dahl. That's a good idea to have an annual report and, you know, have a regular occasion to hear from and interact with MnDOT. What I think we're trying to accomplish with this particular effort, though, is to have MnDOT come forward with some suggestions for how we're going to operate and interact as a state in conjunction with the public, in conjunction with local units of government, et cetera. In other words, come forward with some recommendations for some policies that we're going to establish. Maybe embedded in this idea is the thought that an annual report be developed that comes forward as a recommendation of this one-time event, or we can call it out specifically and say recommendations for an annual reporting process or mechanism.
Met Council operates.
I can work on that.
As far as North Star,
we'll see this again.
It's got the.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Dibble. I just wanted to add. Or get your thoughts, and I didn't talk to you about this before, but I'm thinking as the state moves towards a more integrated development of their passenger and commuter rail plans, it's important to for the commissioner, when thinking about all of these other aspects, to think about how to try to achieve some sort of geographic balance between different regions of the state. So I'm wondering if you'd be amenable to adding a seventh subdivision under Section 5 that would get at that language somehow by saying and recommend how to achieve or consider geographic balance between different areas of the state?
Mr. Chair, yeah, I think that's an excellent suggestion. Very consistent with the nature of a lot of our recent conversations, and certainly consistent with how some other metropolitan areas that we talked about, Salt Lake City and other places, that try to hit on that equity issue. So we could say and recommend how to achieve geographic balance between areas of the state or all areas of the state. So moved.
Mr. Chair, I'd move that language, please. Ms. Berezovsky, did you get that? Or should we repeat it?
Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair and Senator Sieben, I think I got about half of it. If you could repeat it, then I'll write it in.
So add it. Seventh subdivision that reads how to achieve geographic balance between different areas of the state.
Geographic balance.
Okay, here's what Ms. Berezovsky recommends to insert. And recommend actions to provide service with geographic balance across the state. How's that, Senator Sieben?
Fine with me.
Senator Dibble?
Can you repeat?
And recommend actions to provide service with geographic balance across the state. Okay, great. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Senator Dibble, now a motion on your bill.
Chair, I would move Senate File 1667 be recommended to pass as amended. And where are we going?
Finance.
And,
this one's got to go to finance. Yep. Going to finance. On the Dibble motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you. Senator Carlson moves that the vote by which Senate file 1876 passed now be reconsidered. There was an amendment that needed to go to Senator Carlson's bill that that's why we're going to bring it back up here. We're going to take care of that amendment and pass it again. On the Carlson motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion does prevail. Senator Carlson, would you state your motion now?
Mr. Chair, we have a change that was not fully known at the time, but we missed it in our 58 sections of change. But what this does is on page 8, from line 8.26 to line 8.36, the second column refers to the weight limits of a five-axle vehicle, and because we increased the allowable weights to 80,000, what we need to do is take away the parentheses on each side of the numbers that are in column 2. So from 8.26, where it says 74,000 in column 2, to 8.36, where it says 80,000 in column 2, all of those numbers need to have the parentheses taken away.
This is a very technical, folks. Mr. Rudin gives the thumbs up. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Now Senator Carlson moves.
Senate file
876
1876.
As amended. To be recommended to pass and referred to the floor. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail.
Thank you.
You done?
No, we have one more bill to compile here quickly.
Our final day, bill of the day, Senate file 1455, Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, I have a delete all amendment. It's the A2 amendment.
Senator Murphy, while it's being passed off, perhaps you could describe it.
Okay. Mr. Chair, and this is going to be our vehicle for an omnibus transportation bill, policy bill. First of all, members, I'll describe what is in the A2 bill, but there is a section that is in the A2 that needs to be removed, and that's section 9. It's on page 7 and 8, so that's going to be part of my motion on the A2 amendment. But inside this bill is Senate File 93. That's a LADS bill that deals with the liability cap for state tort claims. 285, which is a driver's license, those one suspension after another. 345 is a stump bill, and this is that enhanced driver's license. We also have 462, which is the DWI interlock. We have 599, that's Senator Ress's vehicle lighting requirement, the study. The Sieben bill on deputy register appointment expiration. And then we have two Dibble bills, 1484 and 1667. The one deals with the passenger rail service and the Transportation Commissioner duties and powers. That's much like that's the bill that we just got done hearing. And I would part of my A2 motion would also be to strike the language here that we have on that Dibble bill and replace it with the amendments that were made to Senator Dibble's bill earlier. And then the last one is the Key-Lash Railroad Safety Technology grant application. And then, members, I've got several other amendments that I'm going to offer up quickly. Members, I would move the A2 amendment with those two oral amendments to it.
Senator Murphy moves the the A2 amendment with oral amendments, and including also the Dibble 1667 bill as amended. Okay. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
The motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman, now I've got several amendments to pass out here, but let's work with A7 first. And Mr. Chairman and members, the A7 amendment goes towards a bill that we heard the other night, and it was the ignition interlock system, where we're using the interlock to put people back behind the wheel who have committed a DWI offense. What this does is this also expands the program to include underage DWI, criminal vehicle, vehicular homicide operation, and requires the state to use new technology in identifying participants, giving a breath sample. What we found is that sometimes people can get behind the wheel on these, and they can have their buddy blow in the tube, and then the car runs, and then their buddy jettisons himself, and then now we've got somebody behind the wheel that shouldn't be there. So what that provision does is it just says that there has to be kind of a way to identify who's blowing in the tube. They currently have technology where cameras can be placed in the upper corner of your windshield so that halfway through the time that you blow in the tube, it takes a picture of you, and then law enforcement knows exactly who blew into the tube, and you can't have your buddy doing it for you anymore. The other thing it does is, as you're driving down the road periodically in the current system, it asks you to blow in the tube. Well, if you're going down the road and you have three people in the back seat that aren't drinking, but you're bombed out of your mind, you can pass the tube to the back seat. So now what this says is that who's ever on the program has to blow into it, because now there's going to be a picture taken of them, and they know who it is. So there's no getting around the program. I think this is a needed amendment, members, and I'd move the A7 amendment.
Senator Murphy moves the A7 amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman and members, let's see, which one's this? Oh, that's not the one I want. I have the A3 amendment. We're going to do the A3, 5, and 6 real quick here, because two of these relate to the same issue. Mr. Chairman and members, the A3 and the A5 are two changes. The first one was this is on the towing of vehicles and the content retrieval issue that we worked on last year. And I spoke with Ron Elwood, who Mr. Elwood represents. Low-income and disadvantaged folks. He's the one that brought the original bill to us. What we're doing in the Elwood language is on 1.28, 1.29, we're striking the language that says, or has a household income at or below 50% of the state median income. What happens is that in greater Minnesota, if you're eligible for legal aid, That's one thing. And this still, you know, you still, to be part of the program, you have to prove that you're economically disadvantaged in one way or the other. But in greater Minnesota, the threshold was so low because of this 50% state median that everybody qualified. And so everybody was getting their contents out of the car. And then the tow truck operators had no recourse at all. Mr. Elwood agreed that that was clearly not the intention of the underlying legislation, and we resolved it with this amendment. So, members, I would move the A3 amendment.
Senator Murphy offers the A3 amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, same sign. And it prevails.
Thank you, members. And members, the A5 amendment is an amendment that was brought to me by some of our law enforcement partners. And the issue here is that sometimes vehicles need to be towed, but because we have this very prescriptive time limit on how long you have to wait before you tow them, unless it's an emergency situation, creates problems for a lot of traffic authorities. What Officer Berry had asked of us was to move that timeline up so that they can tow these vehicles and get them off the roadway. A lot of times we all see this. Driving up and down the road, we always see where the trooper has stopped and written the time and the date on the back windshield of the vehicles. That's so when they're driving by, they don't have to stop and get out and look at the ticket that they've written and put on it. They can just drive by and they can see. Well, we all know that sometimes those vehicles stay there for several days before they get towed, and they are a hazard on the roads. Officer Berry brought this language up. We think it's very reasonable, and it gives law enforcement the ability to move some of these vehicles when they need to be, and I would renew my motion on the A5.
Senator Murphy moves the A5 amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
And Mr. Chairman and members, the A6 amendment is simply the technical changes that were done to Senate File 1484 on bikes and pits and on bridges that we did, Senator Jungbauer. I think that was last night. That was part of your legislative agenda. It was a Dibble bill, but I think that the bike and pedestrian part of it was something that you were very interested in. But anyway, members, I would renew the motion on that, on the A6.
Senator Murphy moves the A6 amendment. Any discussion on the A6 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman, that's it for me. I think that Senator Sieben has an amendment for me. And
Senator Bonner.
Might be a couple others. All right.
Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, I don't have, this is a verbal amendment at this point because I don't have it drafted, but it's to include Senate File 933, which was the including studying the Little Crow Transit Way as part of the statewide transportation plan, and there was no fiscal note to that. And we had passed it and we referred it to the floor, mm-hmm. but I'd rather, if at all possible, to have, you know, be in two places.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Bonoff, I don't have a problem with putting the Little Crow Transitway, I think we called it, in the bill. So
it is.
All we need Senate to do is direct counsel to place that Senate file in this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Murphy.
All right.
As introduced.
Senator Bonoff moves the inclusion of Senate File 933 as introduced.
I don't have it with me, but it goes right there.
And it would be placed in prior to Section 25 to study the, which corridor was that?
The Little Crow Transit.
The Little Crow Transit Corridor. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair, I would move that Senate File 1903, which is the design build high-speed rail language that we passed earlier in committee, be amended onto the Senate File 1455.
As amended today.
The amended language.
Mm-hmm. The amended language. As amended by committee.
And Mr. Chairman and committee members, this is the language that basically said that our commissioner needed to work with the commissioner of the state of Wisconsin to see what we can do to make this high-speed rail a reality. We added a little amendment on the end of it. So,
Senator Sieben moves the inclusion of Senate File 1903 as amended to be included in the omnibus bill. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Senator.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, sorry, Senator Dibble.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I was out of the room for the A3 amendment, so I wanted to give my retroactive thanks to Senator Murphy for working that little issue out with the towers. So hopefully that whole conversation will be put to rest from now on.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, and this is my recommendation to everybody on the committee, stay away from tow trucks.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Murphy, I have a major heartburn with sections 1-4, the LATS liability cap and state tort claims. This has nothing to do with transportation law, nor should it be in a transportation omnibus bill. So, members, it doesn't belong in here, and I'm going to move that delete sections 1-4. I think that's sections 1-4, all the same issue from this bill. It really doesn't belong in a transportation bill. I don't think we ought to have it here. And Senator Murphy, you and I get along on a lot of things, but
yeah,
not something like this. It's tort law. It's not transportation.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and Senator Jungbauer, I was just carrying this out of a courtesy to Senator Latz to make sure that it kept moving forward. We can take it out. That's fine. If we feel that we want to put it back in at some time, we'll look for another vehicle.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman, I would move on Senator Jungbauer's request to strike and Ms. Berezovsky, 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Ms. Berezovsky needs to give us some advice.
Mr. Chair and Senator Murphy, it would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 32, and 35.
That's my motion then.
Oh, there it is.
Yep.
32 and 35.
35. Okay.
It's too early in the day to give Senator Jungbauer heartburn. I'll wait till after 5.
Senator Jungbauer moves to delete sections 1, 2, 3, 4, section 33, and 32, and section 35. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman and members, if there's no more amendments, I would move that Senate File 1455 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Senate floor.
Senator Dibble.
Oh, it's got to go to finance. I'm sorry, it has to go to finance. That's right. That's my motion, to finance.
Senator Murphy moves Senate File 1455 as amended and be sent to finance. Any discussion? Senator Dibble.
Oh, I was just confirming that section or the Senate File 1667, that's the language as we just passed, or it's going to be the language that we just passed with the amendments? Okay, great.
Yes. Any discussion on Senator Murphy's motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Senator Murphy.
Seeing no more business before the committee, the meeting is adjourned. Yay.